This week's episode of Still Untitled is made possible with support from Microsoft Surface, introducing the new Microsoft Surface Laptop 3. With its beautiful touchscreen, you'll experience stunning graphics with razor-sharp resolution, now available with a 13.5 or 15-inch screen. And with the latest processors, there's no project that the Surface Laptop can't handle. It's both light and powerful, so you can get more done on the go. Visit surface.com/laptop3 to learn more. That's surface.com/laptop3.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hi, guys.
It's blurring the wrong thing. Yeah. Oh, that looked offensive. Hello, welcome. Hello.
People watching the or just listening to the audio won't realize that we are not together in the same room.
We're socially
this week because
separated.
Distancing. Yeah. Yeah, we're practicing the good practice, the recommended practice of social distancing. So we're all in our relative spaces, but connected through the magic of technology. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing pretty okay. Shit's weird, yo.
I haven't left the house in 10 days.
Seriously?
Really?
We pulled my daughter from school last Monday, and I went for a couple of walks, but I haven't seen other human beings except my wife and my daughter since Friday a week ago. I'm gonna go tell you, I was prepared for this. This is what I've been working on for 20 years. Like, no human contact. Let's do it. I'm good to go. No, it's hard. This whole thing's hard. Obviously.
I'm texting with my mom just for a second. All right. Yes. So, this is really peculiar, isn't it?
Strange times. Obviously, we have a lot of listeners, not just in the U.S., but across the globe, and every country is doing it a little differently. You know, what's going on around the world is happening at different rates and different paces. Everyone's in a different stage. In the States, we can kind of talk about how things have changed over the past week since we talked on Monday a week ago. Because last Monday, you know, while we were going to be cautious and we had a general sense of the dangers, it really escalated over the weekend.
And I want to state at the outset, while definitely I am politically outspoken on my social channels, I think that we're going to want to keep this to the podcast that it has been. You know, it's a very weird time right now. And, you know, the question is what everyone's asking is, what can I do? You know, there are some tremendous resources out there and being built out there for people to figure out the ways in which they can stay safe and keep their families safe, that this isn't the podcast to listen to for like all the current information.
No.
Right. You know, it's like, somebody tweeted a couple of days ago, and I found this quite stabilizing to hear it stated so nakedly. No one on the planet knows what the next 2 months are going to be like. Like, what we're going through has never been gone through before, and how we go through it is anybody's guess. You know, I'm looking at Italy, which is supposedly about 10 days ahead of us, and it sounds like things are going to get really, really rough. I hope that everybody out there listening stopped going to bars. I saw the footage of people in bars in Brooklyn and in New Orleans and Miami, and it's making me crazy.
Yeah.
So I've been through a couple of hurricanes when I was a kid, and Gene and I were sitting here on like Thursday night, kind of, we're ready to go. Like, we have our food and stuff is stocked. We have enough toilet paper to make it through next week. Like, everybody should. And you know, we were sitting here and I was like, there's nothing else to do. There's literally nothing else to do. All I can do is sit here and wait for the start of this thing that's going to presumably be bad. And it, like, in a lot of ways that was more frustrating. But then the thing that came on top of that for me that made my anxiety really bad, and I apologize in advance, but you know, if you're in a hurricane, there's always the feeling that you can get in the car and drive a few hundred miles. And you know, what is a world altering storm will be a bad thunderstorm, maybe a little bit of light flooding. And with this, there's nowhere you can go. Right. That's the thing that's the scariest for me. Is that we're all here. I mean, the comforting side of that is that literally everyone, the whole planet is in it together. But
I mean, that's what the hope is.
I mean,
look, I've been talking about a shift in consciousness. I was watching a movie last night in which two characters kissed hello, like the and I was like,
Yep.
We were watching something. Ads popped up last night, and I was like, "This ad is making me very uncomfortable. I don't have any idea why." They were sharing French fries.
I mean, it's also it's understandably frustrating, like very frustrating for so many people. Like we can say the three of us feel like it sounds like we're pretty prepared and prepared people. I don't know when's the last time you guys went out to buy supplies. I went out over the weekend and you could feel the tension. Like it was somewhat of a normal shopping experience going to a grocery store, but people were definitely eyeing each other. You know, there were aisles that were empty, even in, you know, a grocery store in San Francisco that gets resupplied. And that's, I mean, that's going to be, those stores are not going to be completely empty, right? Like the resupplies are going to happen and there's no reason to panic. And I think there's a kind of a backlash against a kind of unreasonable panic, which isn't what we're advocating. And I think a lot of that is manifested in the frustration that people feel for like people in the service industry and all the people are being affected by this.
Yeah. One of the restaurants my son works at, the restaurant one of my sons works at just closed for 2 weeks. And that's a tough order for a lot of restaurants. Yeah. Closing for 2 weeks can be nearly fatal to many of them. Running on tight margins, it is a business most keenly affected by exactly this kind of slowdown.
And plans, existing plans, right? Not just travel plans. You heard people, obviously, the big parks and theme parks have shut down, and there were photos on social media yesterday of the last night before like Walt Disney World shutting down, and it was packed. And like, I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of those people, but in some regards, I can get it if they're already there, they're pot committed, right? It's so tough when you're right there to make the call to not go. And as you're going to get closer, we know people who have, you know, weddings or have other plans and they might not want to cancel now because they want to wait it out. But as they get closer to the day, then it gets even harder to even want to cancel those things.
Well, our friends at XOXO, the festival in Portland that we've all been to, just announced that they're canceling 2020. Like it's and that's in September. The thing that has become clear, honestly, the reason like your early hoarding of toilet paper isn't effective is that when New York City shut down schools yesterday, they said, hey, you should be prepared. We're going to go until April 30th, but we should be prepared to not have kids go back to school until the fall at this point. Right. Like right. This could be the new normal for a period of not weeks, but months. And we need to be prepared for that.
That's completely. I'm going to make a tangent here. Away from this bleakness just for a second to say, did any of you read the article about the toilet paper supply chain?
No.
It's fascinating.
It's totally fascinating. Toilet paper is one of these industries, Norm, that has a completely flat delivery curve. They sell the same amount of toilet paper no matter what. There is no growth and there is no dip. And so if you attempted to make more toilet paper to fit a certain need, you would end up with a glut of it later. And it is something called like the whip effect within the supply chain.
Oh, yeah.
Whipple effect, I think, right? No. Isn't it named after, I thought it was named after the,
Mr. the, Whipple?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
At any rate, wait, what were they saying? Hold on.
The point is the toilet paper is all made locally. Like you can't ship toilet paper on containers because it doesn't make financial sense because it's too bulky and too light.
Right. It's a high cost per volume. And so all the factories are placed strategically. So it's only a day's drive to wherever they go. And all the toilet paper factories have been running totally autonomously 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 and a quarter days a year for decades.
Wow. Holy smokes.
This whole thing is just going, and there's no way to, like, it's doing what it's doing. And so there will be plenty of toilet paper.
That's ripe for science fiction writing.
Look, Adam's in the pocket of big toilet paper over here. We got to watch out.
Big bidet.
That panicky stuff, like, I saw that Sean Bonner posted a thing from Japan maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago now that was like, hey, there's no toilet paper in Japan right now. And like, I think if you would go back and trace that, like, it's a known phenomenon, the thing that people, like, people who are in a panicking situation, they get to the store, the things that they were coming for aren't there, and they buy whatever the biggest thing is that makes them feel better about buying stuff. And toilet paper is nice and big and bulky, and it fits that bill. So there's some real weird psychology going on there around that, which I didn't understand or know about before.
Well, I took Maggie out for a walk 2 days ago. I went to do some, I haven't been panic buying, but I have been slowly just making sure that we're buttoned down. Honestly, the most important ingredients to me are butter and salt. I could eat a cardboard box if I had enough butter and salt. And so I stopped at the Andronico's over in the Sunset. While the lines to check, everyone had big full carts to check out. Everyone was very cordial, and I've been noticing in San Francisco in general a kind of holy shit, we're in this together sort of vibe that I really appreciate. The people out at the bars at night, notwithstanding. And I didn't have to wait too long to check out. It was only about 20 minutes in line before I was able to check out. So things aren't totally crazy here, thank goodness.
I mean, and we have to be cognizant of the fact that the three of us are all married, relatively older, and we're okay, you know, Netflixing and staying at home, and right? And but I have like a housemate who's in his 20s, and it's tough, right? He's like, I don't have you and your family and your dog, right? And all my friends, some of them are going out, and they're texting right now. And I'm like, don't. And it's really rough for those people who are, their normal is a very much more social life than ours.
Well, it's funny.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we've been talking about this on some of the Discords I'm on a lot lately, and a lot of people are shifting their kind of social interactions online in that way, whether it's like there were people just playing board games in Discord on using the computer as the intermediary, using what, Tabletop Simulator or something the other night. And I was like, this is a wonderful way to get some human interaction if you're home alone that isn't going to be high risk or potentially spread. Because remember, the goal of this whole thing, the flattening the curve thing, the whole point is reduce the number of infection spread because we don't know when we're contagious, right? So going out to get groceries is one thing. Going out to go hang out with your friends, play some, you know, FIFA or NBA 2K or whatever is maybe less good. I was going to say the whole thing reminds me, my grandmother, it was British and was born in 1919. So she was a teenager at the start of World War II and was in her early 20s when the war was over, or late teens, early 20s. And she grew up, she was in London during the
Blitz. Sorry, in the Second World War. Got it.
Second World War. Yeah, so she was born in 1919 and was served in the British Army and the whole thing during World War II. Lived in London, was stationed there. And she would tell, when I was in high school, we would talk a lot about what it was like to be there during the Blitz. Because, you know, it was a pretty unprecedented time. The whole city was being bombed on the daily by the Germans. And they had made massive, massive sacrifices in the war effort. And the thing that we, like, the stories were all over the place. Some of them were sad. Some of them were about a neighbor's house catching a bomb. Some of them were, you know, about the Germans starting bombing early one day and some old codger on the bus saying, oh, Jerry's at it early today, eh? And, like, everybody on the bus having a good laugh. But the upshot is you have to keep going and keep doing the things that you need to do so that when things are better, you're prepared to work to make them better, right? Yeah. That's the goal. And I think that, like, we're not fighting an opponent that we can defeat with guns or punching or, you know, whatever your favorite way of dealing with Nazis is. But like that idea of we're all in it together and everybody's helping everybody out is important.
Well, so my two things that reminded me of. One is that my grandmother, who died in 2005 at the age of 105.
Holy cow.
Yeah, actually contracted and survived the Spanish flu in
1980.
Wow.
Yeah, right? And the other one I wanted to tell you was, oh, right. So I'm talking to you on my new MacBook Pro. I finally upgraded to the 4 terabyte drive because my creative projects folder took over my computer and ate it alive.
It's a lot of, I've seen that folder. It's a lot of folder.
It is a lot of folder. And so I bought one of those privacy screen protectors that you can buy that magnetize onto your thing. And they've got this lovely little nubbin for putting over your camera to stop your camera from being visible, right? Well, the laptop sat in a bag with the screen protector on it. And the screen protector, as thin as it is, keeps the laptop open just the tiniest bit. And the nubbin shattered the screen right where it was sitting.
Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, yeah. So I got to I was in L.A. early last week. I got to L.A. and opened my laptop to see the screen, just a wall of destruction.
Oh, wow.
So I sent it into Apple. The screen got repaired. It was, they did it on warranty. It was great.
Wow.
And I went to the Apple store Friday afternoon to get it. And that was a scene, man. So this is the Apple store on Union Square, right? Which has that wall of windows.
Yeah.
Stores. So the windows were closed. Oh, we'll talk about allergies in a second.
Yeah, can we talk about your cough?
The windows were closed, and the whole staff was behind the first row of tables, which had stanchions between them. So a security guard asked you what you were there for, and if you were there to pick something up, he let you in, just like 10 feet from you and everybody. You stood there, you said your name, you held up your ID while they looked at it but didn't touch it. Then they brought me a bag with my laptop in it, and I pulled my laptop out of the bag. It was all like no contact transfer.
Wow.
Yeah. And listen, the rain here with the pollen bloom has been kicking my face's ass.
The tree pollen.
Of course, in the middle of the night last night, I'm like, I've got the virus, I'm sure.
Well, there's a thing with the tree pollen and the allergies and the fact that anxiety causes shortness of breath for me, at least, you know. It's like you have a really good sneezing, coughing fit, and you're like, oh God, this is it, this is the big one. No, it's fine. Everybody's anxious is the thing, too.
It's not about the sneezes either.
No, sneezes are clean. You can sneeze all you want.
Yeah, yeah. You guys watching anything? Have anything on your list?
I'm burning through the West Wing.
Yes.
let's see. I was looking at Netflix the other night and saw that Contagion and Outbreak were on the top 10, and I was like, "Oh, people, you're making a horrible mistake here." So I went to watch Castlevania instead. That was much better. That Castlevania animated show is really all over the place, but really neat. It's a Warren Ellis written thing, and the animation's lovely. And it's much more comprehensible than The Witcher was. So,
I'd say both Outbreak and Contagion, while they're big leaps in the science, they're still really well-made movies. And it's interesting we did actually watch Contagion last week. It's funny to watch that after being inundated with all the news, because it's like, you know, more than the characters. As just the observer, you're like, I know exactly what he's talking about when they're trying to explain to me the R-naught number for, you know, the virus in Contagion. It's like, yeah, and it's actually comforting to some extent because it's all fiction.
Well, thing two, one of the things we've been doing, as you said, Will, in terms of socially getting together, is we've been putting people on Skype or Zoom, actually, which we really like, and just putting them on the computer and chatting while we're like cooking.
That's what, we do that at meals sometimes with my parents and friends and stuff like that.
Well, and we were chatting last night with Thing too, and he said he watched Contagion recently, and I didn't remember this, but he was like, the Gwyneth Paltrow's death scene is one of the most brutal things he'd ever seen, and he needed to turn off the movie at that point, which is shocking from this kid who grew up on Tarantino.
So Gina and I watched that movie. We had the flu maybe around the time we met you, probably like 2012, 2011. And we were so sick that we just made a bed on the floor of the living room because it was closer to the bathroom than the bedroom.
Yeah.
And we were laying there. We were like, let's watch this movie about Gwyneth Paltrow movie about getting sick. And by about the end of the second act, we were both pretty convinced that we were doomed and that we were the beginning of a viral pandemic.
It's the Kate Winslet cut. That gets me every time.
The don't touch your face, and then she starts coughing.
Well, when she gives her jacket to someone, or it's I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but yes.
It's the after effects of the thing that got me in that movie more than anything else, I think. Seeing the people who were the survivors dealing with the world as it ended up was challenging. So anyway.
Before we continue on with the show, I want to let you know that support for Still Untitled comes this week from Microsoft Surface, introducing the new Microsoft Surface Laptop 3. With its beautiful touchscreen, you'll experience stunning graphics with razor-sharp resolution. Now available with a 13.5 or 15-inch screen. And with the latest processors, there's no project the Surface Laptop can't handle. It's both light and powerful, so you can get more done on the go. Visit surface.com/laptop3 to learn more. That's surface.com/laptop3. Now back to the show.
I have watched, I've watched 1917 now twice.
Ooh.
And I've been burning through all the behind-the-scenes footage I can find of it. I'm so blown away by that movie. Yes, I know I should go see it in a theater. I don't get out to the movies a lot, and I think it'll be a while. However, I've got a nice screen here in the house to watch it on, and I rarely watch a movie in which I know as I'm watching it that I'm going to watch it again and again and again, because I just want to spend time in the space between these characters. It's an amazing achievement, both technologically, but also narratively and performance wise. Holy cow. You guys have seen it?
I haven't seen it yet. I was waiting to see it in theaters, but I guess I'll just watch it at home now. Cause you know,
Adam, I mean, we're not going to spoil this plot for you, Will, but for Adam, when you were watching it, at least the first time, did you try to hold yourself back from noticing the cuts, or could you not help but try to pick them out in your brain?
So I can't help but try to pick them out. The problem is unlike Rope, this is not a movie with four cuts. This is a movie with hundreds and hundreds of cuts in it. Yeah. They're just really, really beautifully done. And I didn't realize this, but so I read this long interview with the editor, and
yeah,
you heard about how this film was cut. It was cut as they shot.
Yeah, they had to, because you had to pick the scene.
But not only that, they had to adjust the timing and the pacing of each scene so that it worked with everything they were doing up until then. There was no get out of jail free card for changing the pacing. So whole scenes were rewritten as they were going in order to alter the pacing every single day.
This is so they couldn't, like the studio couldn't come back at the end of the film and be like, we need to cut 10 minutes from the middle of this movie because there's no place to do the.
Well, not even that well. They couldn't usually, you know, when you start the editing process, you go through your takes, right? And some of these shots had up to 54 takes per shot. And those takes had to be reviewed and chosen before they shot the next shot for matching purposes.
Because yeah. With every take, I think one of the most common cuts in the film is a clever wipe. Yeah. Every single time something crosses most of the frame, it's a wipe.
Yeah,
and that allowed them to really break this down into. And there are some takes that are 4 and 5 minutes long, but I think they're in the minority.
Well, that's how they did it in Birdman too, right? Like it was a lot of like following the walk, and then the camera would cut left to go into a different room, and it would cut on that door jam or whatever.
Except that for Birdman, they use the passage of time differently. Like remember in Birdman, they would pan the camera outside a window and then have like a time lapse of the sun. And so it wasn't this continuous quote unquote, you know, 2 hours or 2.5 hours. And there's only one of that here. I don't want to say exactly how they do it, but they didn't use computer controlled camera systems. They weren't able to say match, you know, yeah, it wasn't like match this shot with this shot. Yeah.
The handheld stabilizers. And Norm, to that end, that was one of the things I found the most astounding about the narrative of 1917 is in its passage of time. Because while the film is in a single shot, there is one cut that you know about that occurs. The film really does plasticize time as you move through the narrative. And there's a couple of scenes in which he is in transit. And even though the in transit might in the film only be 7 or 8 minutes of footage, by the time he gets off his transit, you feel like it's been a couple of hours. There's a way in which Mendes plays with the oscillation of excitement and boredom that this is something I'm keeping watching to kind of understand, because there's a mastery of the beats of narrative in this film that's illuminating stuff I didn't know before about storytelling.
And it's like the kind of time distortion effects, you know, the watching the kettle, right? There are moments that intentionally the character is, you know, for all intents and purposes, watching water boil, and time slows down for him. But that's when he gets his breath, because it is continuous. And the exhaustion that you feel as a viewer is supposed to be there, because it's amplified in like the exhaustion he's feeling throughout that day.
And the performances of the two lead actors, as you know, you always, they were really specific. I read that they wanted to cast people, unknowns, people you didn't know, because you wanted to feel fresh about it. And they're it's super remarkable. The achievement is gobsmacking. And I'll watch this. I'll probably watch it again this afternoon.
It's so good.
I'll have to give that a watch. I watched the people who make the Toys That Made Us documentaries on Netflix did a series of four on the movies that made us.
Right.
I think the four movies are Ghostbusters, Die Hard, Dirty Dancing, and I don't remember what the fourth one is.
Ghostbusters.
No, I got that one. There's Ghostbusters, Dirty Dancing, Die Hard, and something else. Anyway, I watched
Home Alone.
I watched the Dirty Dancing episode last night, and holy cow, what an amazing! Like I already love the movie, right? We all love everybody loves the movie. You can't not love the movie.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. Having seen that as a teenager, when I didn't know or give a shit about abortion, really. Knowing how the writer was like, hey, this is a movie about, you know, dancing and growing up and coming of age, and also like this specific period of time. It was fascinating hearing the story of how they managed to keep the message in the movie without losing that through the whole thing. It was fascinating hearing about Patrick Swayze constantly injuring himself, constantly hurting himself dancing.
Brutal. But I also really appreciated in the series. I mean, the narration gets a little behind the music at times. However, I really liked how they include a lot of the negative stuff that happened on each of these films. Like, they dish some real dirt on some of the actors. And even though you have very few A-list actors showing up in any of those, any of the programs, you still feel like you didn't just get the studio's version of how it was to shoot a movie. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I thought it was fascinating. I've watched that one, the Die Hard one, and the Ghostbusters one. I have to watch the Home Alone one still. But
The Ghostbusters one is very funny when they start talking about how, yeah, you never had any idea when Bill was going to show up on set. Could be anybody's guess.
Where are you in West Wing, Adam, if you're burning through that?
We are in the middle of season four, post the re-election. And it turns out this is a season that I watched up to the end of season three and then stopped, because this is all brand new. All the Josh Molina stuff I had never seen before.
He's a controversial character, especially in my home.
He's what?
He's controversial. And, you know, he, for people who don't know, right. He was brought in to replace Rob Lowe, Sam Norman Seaborn. And so Josh Molina is the actor. Will Bailey is the character. And the way he's brought in, he's really brought in as one of them. He's like, actually, you're meant to really love him, because he's like, he's very idealistic. He's competent. He's brilliant. He's supposed to share all these same qualities. And the character really goes downhill. They have to make him a character that I don't think fans wanted by the end of the show. So I'm curious to see what you think. Josh Molina on Twitter, he's one who also co-hosts the West Wing Weekly, right? And he's, you know, his Twitter profile is, you know, I ruined West Wing. The guy who ruined West Wing, yeah.
I'm a huge Josh Molina fan, because my first Aaron Sorkin show was Sports Night. We've talked about how amazing that show is.
Yeah.
And how amazing he is on it. Look, you know, the West Wing is just balm at the time that I need balm. It's a vision of the world that is consistent and lovely, even if it's fictional.
If you have time, catch up to when they get to season six, end of season six-ish, because that's the primaries for the next election, and to watch that in relative real time with what's going on in the primaries here is very surreal.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah. We did that for the last election, and for whatever reason, stopped watching right after the election. I don't know what changed. It was it didn't work last time, is all I'm saying.
I did watch a movie the other night. I was two things happened. I was scrolling through stuff, and I discovered that there's a Steven Soderbergh film that I didn't know about.
What?
The Gina Carano one called...
Oh, Haywire. Yeah, Haywire. Yeah.
New or old?
No, 2011 with like Michael Douglas and Channing Tatum and like all of these people in it.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. It has 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, so I'm going to watch that.
Have you watched Knives Out yet?
I watched most of it.
God damn it! No!
It's super enjoyable. For some reason, we got to like 20 minutes from the end and we paused, and that was like 2 days ago. We haven't gotten around to finishing it. I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, there goes the Logan Lucky segue. Sorry, I was going to ask you, which is your favorite terrible accent from Daniel Craig?
Actually, to be fair, I think Daniel Craig is, for a performance that is so right on the edge of heavy-duty scenery chewing, I feel like he holds it back just enough. I think it's a terrific performance.
I think it's... I love it. I think it's completely intentional. Like, I think the epitome of the Foghorn Leghorn Southern accent that he does in that movie is not an accident. Anyway, I thought it was
great. I found it more believable than his accent in Logan Lucky.
I like the Logan Lucky one a lot, because it is, growing up in that part of the country, it is laughably bad. But yeah,
Logan Lucky is terrific. That might be one we watch, because my wife hasn't seen it.
Oh yeah, it's a delight. The way that all comes together, that one comes together. It's like I pitched that as an Ocean's 11 for the you know, mountain people.
So we've mentioned Contagion, and now we've mentioned Logan Lucky, and this is a perfect segue for me to talk about the fact that I have this. I love Jennifer Ely. She plays one of the researchers in Contagion. She's most famous, or has been famous, for playing the incredible lead in the BBC 6-hour version of Pride and Prejudice, which, if you haven't watched the original Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy, that is a fantastic thing to watch right now. It is. I've watched it two or three times all the way through. It's a magnificent adaptation. But Logan Lucky has Catherine Waterston in it, who was the star of Alien Covenant and a bunch of other wonderful stuff. And she and Jennifer Ely sort of hold this similar place in my brain of like this very smart, awesome female character actors who just are terrific in everything people put them in.
They're both like young Meryl Streeps.
Yeah, very much so. Absolutely. Yeah, I Chameleon. Saw that.
We've been watching Schitt's Creek. Just as a kind of comfort food thing to dip into when it's the end of the day and you don't want to think anymore. It is amazing how every episode of that, we're midway through the second season, every episode of that is better than the ones that came before. And they're, as they discover who those characters, it's really fun to watch them, these people who've been doing this together for such a long time, figure out what the who the characters are and put them together. And Eugene Levy is just so guileless and horrific in that show. It's very, there's a scene early on when they ask him to do a eulogy. They asked him to be a pallbearer for somebody who died in town that he doesn't know. And he's just sitting there and you immediately see the wheels turning. How can I get out of this? How can I get out of this? How can I get out? I have a bad back. And then a day later they come back and they're like, well, will you do the eulogy instead? It's like, I don't really know this person at all. It is absolutely brilliant and such a treat. If you grew up watching Christopher Guest movies, it's wonderful that there's so much Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara and all those folks.
Those guys are such, can you imagine? I like every time I watch them go, I think about what an unbelievable lucky pleasure it would be to watch them go on set and watch them workshop these scenes and these characters with each other. Have you ever seen on Waiting for Guffman? There's some unbelievable behind the scenes material.
Oh no, I have the DVD in the garage though. I'll go dig it out.
Oh no, 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 no. Okay, so there is in the behind the scenes material. There is oh my God, the actress from Party Girl from The New Girl. No, not.
Parker Posey.
Parker Posey, excuse me. Yes, Parker Posey. Yes, the right.
I got one.
Thank you.
Finally.
Parker Posey filmed her own audition for Waiting for Guffman in character. Wow. So she plays out this whole scene that her character has written that is just it's mind blowing. It's amazing to watch. It's totally incredible. And you feel watching the behind the scenes material on Guffman is the closest I've gotten to feeling like I'm on set, because you do get to watch these guys talking about the experience of putting the film together and putting these characters together.
Oh, that sounds fabulous.
Sorry about that. I had a quick phone call.
No worries. We're actually going to wrap it up, but obviously we're watching a lot of stuff. We'd love to know what people are doing to help pass the time if you are, self-isolating, if you have to work from home. This is going to be the new normal for a little bit. I mean, especially, for this podcast for sure. So we'll try to keep on doing this just to, again, have some semblance of normalcy. And we got time on our hands. We'll be watching a lot of stuff. We'd love to get your recommendations, and we'll be sharing kind of like our own experiences getting through this as well.
Well, and, Tested is going to be a no touch, no contact workplace for at least the next month. So we'll be shooting videos in a wholly brand new set of ways, I think.
Yeah.
Figure that out this week. And yeah.
I've been doing daily streams during the daytime so that people have a place to hang out and chat. And some days we do talk about COVID stuff. Some days we do no talking about COVID stuff, depending on whether people want to have breaks. But you can find them at twitch.tv/notthatwillsmith.
Awesome. And yeah, stay connected to people. I think things like this, things like what we're doing help. It gives a sense that you're not alone. And it helps us too. Honestly, it's good to see you guys, even if we can't be in the same room. Yeah. And we'll hopefully be back next time. But
we'll be back
next time. We'll keep this going. This will still be a place you can visit.
Yeah.
All right. Wash your hands, guys.
Yeah, wash your hands.
I'm going to wash my hands right now. That just felt dirty.
I know. All right.
Bye, everyone. Guys.